As much as some of the social issues that former presidential candidate Pat Buchanan shouted about from the podium at the 1992 Republican convention seemed to come from the party's fringe at that time, in the intervening decades, they've established themselves in the mainstream of the GOP's rhetoric. And inevitably, they are promoted and sustained by the language of religion, both within and beyond the party's formal leadership. When Mitt Romney entered the current presidential race, leading voices within the Republican Party denounced him as not Christian. They even called him a member of a cult. But as his nomination began to look inevitable, those same voices found a way to approve of his religious background. It's important to note that this did not involve looking beyond Romney's faith, something I would have been much more comfortable with, but virtually to redefine him as an evangelical for practical purposes, to redefine his religious background and then double down on how that now helped make him qualified to lead. Well, the same magic happened after Missouri Representative Todd Akin made his extraordinary statement regarding rape and conception. Need I even remind you that Akin said that if a woman was raped legitimately, whatever that means, then she wouldn't get pregnant because women raped legitimately had biological forces that kept her from being pregnant. Some prominent leaders, like former presidential candidate and Baptist Mike Huckabee, did not distance themselves from Akin's remarks, but instead embraced them. And it all brings to mind the old saying, he may be a fool, but he's our fool. Have we reached yet another new low in win-at-all-costs electioneering? And what does it do to religion when dogmas are seemingly rewritten to match the words of a favored political candidate? Look, I have been wanting to talk about this with a fellow Baptist. In fact, I've been wanting to talk about it with a fellow woman who is a Baptist because this denomination seems particularly vulnerable to this kind of manipulation in recent years. So, joining me, and I want you to know straight up front, she is a friend of mine and has been for years, and the kind of conversation we're going to have here is one we would have over a cup of coffee or a glass of water or whatever. Joining me now is Susie Painter, director of the Texas Baptist Human Life Commission and a respected voice not only in Baptist life but beyond on these issues. Susie, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I want to ask you right off, when you heard Todd Akin's remark, what did you think?
You know, I have to say, it was shock. It was total shock. My first thought was, I didn't hear that right. That couldn't possibly be what he said. Uh-huh. My second take on it, after I realized, no, he really meant what he said and he was defending what he said, is that we've had a new low of the religious community, mm-hmm. not even giving credibility to the most basic human science of reproduction. Mm-hmm. I was offended as a woman. I was offended as a Christian. And I thought, my gosh, you know, will there be no barriers to what people will say mm-hmm. in order to manipulate an election?
Mm-hmm. So, fast forward, what did you think when you heard or read that Mike Huckabee had aligned himself with Todd Akin's remarks and tried to build a Baptist base of support for them?
You know, I'm back up to say that the idea of abortion-based rhetoric in our politics for so many years, it made me think, have we just talked about this issue to such, you know, just so endlessly mm-hmm. that we have nothing left to say? Mm-hmm. only to go to a more extreme and more extreme position to now to try to diminish the impact and the horror and the tragedy of rape. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed in Mike Huckabee because I have, understood his positions many times as a thoughtful position, mm-hmm. a conservative position, but a very thoughtful position. Mm-hmm. And I was very surprised. And then I thought, well, is he just hoodwinked by this same pseudoscience? And if so, why not denounce it today?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you have been hoodwinked by this kind of pseudoscience that says that a woman's body can somehow combat this, then and then you read, and anyone can, because I certainly did. I'd never, read that before, and mm-hmm. so I certainly went to see where that source was. It's been totally discredited. Why not say, in the past, I've stood on this, and now I denounce it.
Susie, isn't it a kind of relativism that first and foremost serves a political purpose and tries to do that by being framed in a religious context?
Yeah, and here's the paradox in that, is that they, so many times the preliminary rhetoric is we have the absolute values. Mm-hmm. Here are the real truths. And then the articulation of something like this is the exact opposite. It's a relativistic statement. It's how can I change today? It's the end justifies the means. I can say anything. Which this to me is deception.
Mm-hmm.
And the it does discredit to the gospel, to the Christian community, to the greater good of mankind to say that we are going to just pick up the toolbox of deception in the name of this political party. And the reason I say that is I see so many churches and religious groups being used. It's like their Rolodex is for sale.
Right.
And I'll deliver to you this many names or this many, this number of people, these many groups.
Yeah.
And so in order to be favored by the purchaser of that Rolodex, mm-hmm. It's like we'll say anything. And the deception in the name of religion, is among the greatest betrayals.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you along those lines about something that I mentioned in the introduction to this segment. What about the radical changes that we've seen regarding attitudes toward Mormonism in terms of Mitt Romney's being a palatable candidate for evangelical Christians? And then again, my preference would be that these questions not enter the political debate at all, that we just talk about, is he a good candidate for president? But since they are in the debate, do you see this is a case where the candidate failed the basic litmus test of the evangelical community, and then they just rewrote the test?
Absolutely. And here's the a similar paradox, a similar irony to it, which is that at the same time that they have turned from even having an articulate analysis of Mormonism and the differences between evangelical Christianity and Mormonism, and there are several points to be discussed along that line, but mm-hmm. instead of even going down that road, it's just a wholesale discount of the differences, as I believe as Mike Huckabee said in his speech last night, well, it's what he's going to do for the country, it's not his religion, which is, again, the irony is that they were, these groups are often formed and built on their godly principles, on their scriptural foundations, and so to dismiss that wholesale, on one hand. Secondly, in the most vehement and destructive ways, you have the Representative Gohmert and others coming, and Michelle Bachmann coming against Muslims and that are in positions of responsibility in the government, impugning their religious nature and context and culture by association, you know, totally unfounded, with, you know, accusing them of radical groups and affiliations. And so it's like they're discounting religious difference on one hand, and then but escalating the verbal violence on the other hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Same voices, same voices.
Susie, I want to ask you an overtly self-serving question. Is there anything in our historic Baptist tradition as Christians that gives credence to or affirmation for the kind of behavior we saw in Huckabee's embrace of this terrible comment about rape, or the nimbleness with which we saw Baptist pastors move from a condemnation of a candidate to an affirmation of a candidate on the basis of that candidate's political identity? Where in our tradition does that get affirmation?
Well, I'll tell you what a friend of mine says. Be careful of the beans. The beans, I said. Yes, the human beings, he said.
I say.
I think, you know, our fallibility as human beings when faced with power, it is a litmus test of our convictions. Are you going to stand with your convictions when faced with the temptation, the sweet taste of powerful notoriety? And that, you know, I mean, our tradition, many traditions, the tradition of integrity, says this is the test. Sadly, we don't rehearse for it very well.
Yeah.
And so when pastors, when leaders are met with the bright lights of fame and the pandering of powerful people, gosh, it's hard to reach down and keep that touch point of conviction and constancy. And so when I see this wavering from one pole to another, from one place to another, it's not that I might not even share many, many views of the person who's speaking. But the sadness to me is the lack of consistency in the face of power. And the witness of Christ in the face of power was consistency. And I think that's what the sad context for the Christian community right now is that story will be written that, oh, no, they couldn't be consistent. They had to wave all around the place to pander to someone else.
Susie, in one of your early comments, you implied interest in this subject, and if you want to say more about that or not, I think it justifies this question. Are there other instances where you observe secular politics creeping into churches, and how important is this development?
Well, yes. I mean, I do think, you know, interestingly enough, in this day and age of so many institutions deteriorating, what we see is that when a political group or an issue group casts about for how can I get my message to a large number of people in a short amount of time, you know, there aren't that many civic clubs anymore. There aren't that many other kinds of institutional, but the church is there. And so I think the church has become more vulnerable. The church has been looked at as, oh, here's a neighborhood organization where there, you know, every 7 days there's going to be 500 people sitting here. Boy, if we could just capture that audience. And so, you know, social media notwithstanding, I think a lot of groups look to the local organization of the church as a place to sell their message. And so many times, that, you know, there are good salesmen. There are big marketing dollars that are pushing messages and pushing them directly towards congregations. And like I said, we haven't rehearsed how to receive those, how to discern that. And often we sometimes inadvertently, I think, repeat the message that some other fervent person, you know, brings to the congregation.
Well, and I'm well aware that given your mission in your denomination and in Texas and beyond, this makes your job harder when something like this happens. And so because we're just about out of time, but I've got to ask you, where is the hope within denominations like Baptist to reclaim some integrity on social issues that are diluting the church's teaching for political expediency?
You know, I think there are some very simple principles to apply. One is have a forum, have an issue forum where more than one point of view is espoused. Mm-hmm. Even if 99% of your congregation, or you think 99% of your congregation believes one thing, you know, have a real forum. You know, invite more than one point of view. That is a sign of integrity in the community. Mm-hmm. I think to actually teach the importance of involvement in politics, but also the boundaries of the use or abuse of a congregation. Yeah. I think there is a code of ethics that could be adopted by local congregations to say, in any political climate, here are the rules we're going to play by.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we haven't needed that so much in the past. But I do think we need it today. I think people are looking for, you know, where, and I've had pastors say to me, oh my gosh, I didn't know I was going to get pulled into this. I didn't know it was going to turn into this kind of, you know, dissension in my church, or that I was going to end up being pushed to the front of the stage to say something I wasn't that comfortable saying, but I was too far into it to say no. You know, I mean, I've had that sort of buyer's remorse response from pastors before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's not taught in our seminaries, and until you're faced with that sort of position in your church, we haven't been preemptive enough. So that's one of the things that our organization is working on is, you know, things that churches can do.
Good.
And then things that churches should not do. And a simple list of rules that could be guidelines, regardless of your political party or where you fall along the spectrum, how to maintain the integrity of the church, because that's your central mission.
Susie, why don't you give our listeners your website so they can check you out and may find some help in what your information you're providing?
Sure. It's texasbaptist.org/CLC. That stands for the Christian Life Commission. Or you can just Google Texas Baptist and go to the Christian Life Commission. That's our website. We have several pages on public policy and several pages on keeping your church out of court, including IRS rules of what churches can and can't do, and some resources as well about churches and politics. So,
good.
Be happy to share.
Susie Painter is the director of the Texas Baptist Human Life Commission. She also heads the Office of Advocacy and Care. Susie, I've been wanting to talk with you, and I really appreciate you joining us today and sharing your insights on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Wilson. My only regret is that there wasn't a real cup of coffee between us, and we got to see each other.